listening to WMHHLP 103.5 FM, New Haven's home for community radio. We are broadcasting live from downtown New Haven. We are also streaming live on TuneIn Radio and NewHavenIndependent.org. We are also live on Facebook, New Haven Independent Facebook page, as well as the Fit Muslim on Facebook page. You can go there and you can actually view our Facebook Live video if you'd like to see faces. If you can't get in front of your computer, go ahead and download the TuneIn app. That way that you can stay in tune with the show. That's really important because we are going to talk. We're going to talk today. Today is just us talking. So I want you to make sure that you are able to call in. Check out the number below this video if you are on Facebook. And you can call in and let me know what you think. So today is a beautiful Wednesday morning here in Connecticut. You know, I always start off with telling you what the weather is like because I think it's so impactful on my day. So it is actually a very nice fall, crisp morning. Sweater kind of morning, no coat, which I enjoy. I have been procrastinating trying to put on a coat. I don't want to put on a coat. I had to wear one day, but that's it. I don't want to wear any more than that. So we are on a beautiful day, but since today was a talk back show, I decided that I would talk about what has been all up and down my news feed and my Facebook people commenting on. So this is what we are going to talk about. So if you have been on social media over the last week or so, and I just have to say that I've come up with a new conclusion in life, which is if someone is not on any social media, then they are weird. So that is my conclusion. And I have actual evidence of people who I've met who don't do social media. When I say social media, that means you don't have Facebook, you don't have Twitter, you don't watch YouTube. YouTube is a social media, by the way. Somebody apparently wasn't sure about, I talked to somebody about that, and he was like, I didn't know that was social media. Yes, it is. It's just another way of sharing via video. So people who don't have social media are weird, let me tell you. Because they actually don't get to partake and see all the things that's going on in the world, right? So they're inside of like this little teeny bubble and they don't get to see all the things that are going on. So on social media, we had an interview that included Gabrielle Union, Ellen Pompeo, who has been officially invited to the cookout, as well as Gina Rodriguez and I want to say Emma, oh gosh, I can't even remember her last name. I apologize. Emma Roberts, right? Who was very interesting. So this was an interview or a panel discussion more than an interview about disparities inside of the entertainment industry. So one of the things that came out of this exchange is Ellen Pompeo being very forward as to how she takes action steps towards using her recognized white privilege to bring about equality, or at least some steps. So she gave kind of like a monologue about how it's important to see diversity, not just on camera, but behind the camera as well, and how it's white people's job to actually advocate for this because it's a system, and in her words, that we messed up, we created this, and so we have to fix it, talking to white people from a white person. So she got invited to the cookout. Because all of she said stuff she said was absolutely true. And the interesting thing about it is that like her comment went viral because we have a positive and we have a negative. So the negative part that went viral was when Gina Rodriguez, she engaged in what people are referring to as oppression Olympics, right? So this is really interesting. So I want you to take this in context, and I'm going to tell you kind of like the context if you have not heard it. And if you have a comment, you can give me a call at 203-684-8907. And you can tell me what you thought about this. So the comment that Gina Rodriguez made was, she said, "I get so petrified in this space talking about equal pay, especially when you look at intersectional aspect of it, right? Where white women get paid more than black women get paid more than Asian women get paid more than Latina women, and it's very scary space to step into. So that was the comment that she made that people were very, very upset about. So some of the reactions, I want to just read you some of the titles of articles that are commenting on on what she said. So let me say, the only people that I see so far that has been upset really is black people, and I am not one of those black people, even though I'm black, because I mean, technically, that's true. So, The Grapevine titled her article, "Meet Gina Rodriguez, the Latina actress who refuses to allow black women to ever be great." Okay, so Black Enterprise has an article that says, "As an Afro-Latina, Gina Rodriguez comments don't surprise me." So, I think there's really... Okay, and then there's another article in The Grapevine that says, "Gina Rodriguez boldly claims that black women get paid better." Okay, so this is a little bit, this is an interesting topic for me. It's interesting because there are a couple of respects. And all my Facebook friends, I'm going to tell you that I am going to read some of your comments because I thought it was really interesting how people were just like, really up in a roar about what she says. So let me say this. Technically, what she said is actually fact, right? When we look at just about every industry, whether it's entertainment, whether it's manufacturing, whether it's medical, whether at just about every industry, it's, I think we have maybe three or four, that is the hierarchy of the amount that people are paid. So I saw one Twitter comment where someone was saying that, well, when you look at the highest paid actresses of all time, there is an Hispanic woman on this list, but there is no black woman. I really don't think that that discredits what she said. So that's kind of like white people saying, well, Oprah has more money than me, so how are black people paid less than me? There's always exceptions to the rule, but I think she was talking in general. So that's kind of like part of my view. Now, in this whole debacle that I call it, I think that people have, so this is my question from one black person to another black person. Are we becoming too sensitive? Like, seriously. Like, are we being too sensitive? So, if you have a comment, I really want you guys to call in and tell me your view of this. Really? 203-684-8907. Don't be shy. Call me and tell me, were you offended by Gina Rodriguez's comments? And I would really actually also like to hear from other Latinx, even Latina, to see, like, is this, I have to be honest, I'm still trying to figure out several things inside of this idea of, you know, we are in a phase where we're constantly saying that women have to stick together. Women have to stick together. I travel, and this is a question that I have asked myself over the last year or so, being on boards and around groups of women, generally liberal white women who claim to be feminists, not saying that they're not, but this is the, you know, they fly their feminist flags high. And one of the things that I've noticed is that we advocate, but we don't advocate. We advocate for women, in those circles. But that that advocacy is an advocacy for white women by default. So when we talk about equal pay, and again, her comments were actually true, when is it okay to fight for the rights of the people who are worse off than we are? So as women fighting for equal pay, we are fighting for white women to be paid equally as white men. At what point do we fight for black women to be paid equally as white men? At this point, like, black Asians and Latinas will be doing great if we just get paid, white women get paid.
I'm just saying.
Like, at what point do we advocate for that? So I'm not defending Gina Rodriguez's statement or making a definitive taking a side or another. I'm just saying it. I think that we have to remove emotion from it. Like, I notice, like, no shade because I'm dark skinned, right? That several of the women who commented on my post on Facebook who began to talk about colorism are dark skinned women. So are we being too sensitive and emotional about what she said? When we think about women advocating for other women, where does that advocacy begin and where does it end? And I'm going to have to tell you the limitations of my comments. The limitations of my comments is I was told by several people is this is a pattern for Gina Rodriguez, that she said things like this before about black women. And I have not looked up her previous comments. So I am functioning on the interview that I saw with her. And so I don't know what she said previously about black women that made people like say, as I'm seeing, the Griot has a article that says she's a habitual hater. They literally. So the title of this article is Habitual Hater Gina Rodriguez is the Latina friend that you don't want. Oh, they're like, she really got dragged. Wow. She like seriously got dragged on the internet for these comments. So I think that it is, so the whole article is Habitual Hater Gina Rodriguez is a Latina friend you don't want speaking up for you. So I'm thinking, I didn't actually think she was speaking up for black people. I think she was speaking up for Latina people, Latina women, right? So I don't think that she put herself in a position to speak up for black women. And so that goes to another question that I have. Do we automatically expect all people of color to speak up for every other person of color? Is that kind of a natural inclination that we think that people of color has, like, that we have this obligation, like, you can't advocate just for Hispanic people or just for Asian people without advocating for black people as well? That's a question. Again, I am not saying anything definitive. I am just putting questions out for us to think about. And if you have a comment or answer to one of my questions, you can call me at 203-684-8907. Again, 203-684-8907. And we are talking about Oppression Olympics. And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Mornings with Mubaraka on WNHHLP 103.5 FM. In New Haven, Connecticut. We are broadcasting live on TuneIn Radio. We are also on newhavenindependent.org and on Facebook, both the New Haven Independent and Fit Muslima Facebook pages. We are talking and having a conversation, or I'm commenting on the recent panel discussion of Gabrielle Union, Ellen Pompeo, Emma Roberts, and Gina Rodriguez, and some of the uproar that happened after Gina Rodriguez made her statement about Hispanic women and Asian women getting paid less than Black women. So I'm going to actually read a couple of the comments that was underneath my post when I posted it on Facebook. So I don't want my Facebook friends to get nervous because they're going to be like, oh man, if I post something underneath Mubarak's page, she's going to read it on the radio. I might. I'm just saying. Make sure you are your authentic self because it might get read on the radio. So, Hueda said that, but what she said is true for the most part. So here's something else. So Hueda is African, and she said that, and she's married to an African American. So, this is somebody that actually knows. And so she said, I know I might be attacked for this, but why do many black folks in America think that no one else can hold a candle to suffering? That no other suffering had merit and no one else could complain anything in life because it's only black folks who have suffered the most and hence hold the mantle. This is really a rhetorical statement, by the way. Already had this conversation with many folks over the years, of course. I'm just the devil for saying such a thing because I'll never understand. So my response to Hueda was, if your question wasn't rhetorical, I would say because 95% of the time, black people do suffer the most. But that doesn't mean we need to play oppression Olympics and we don't need to automatically discount the 5%. So I think that that is a really interesting perspective from somebody who is not African American, meaning lineage from stolen African bodies brought to America. I think that it's an interesting perspective that from her perspective, black people seem to always want to have the hold the mantle, as she says, on oppression. So I think that this comes from a couple of things that African Americans, and again with the definition just presented, African Americans have endured one of the most brutal and the longest form of oppression in history, right? So even when we look back, and again, this is not oppression Olympics. This is some of the reasons why African Americans are like, you know, we're advocating for this and advocating for that, and black people still haven't gotten justice or equality in America. And many black people look at it, and this is not necessarily my opinion. I'm kind of like giving comments that I've had with other African Americans, which is things like, you know, given that we haven't had equality, everybody wants us to advocate for them, but nobody advocates for us. And that creates this sort of tension for African Americans. Everybody wants to bring equality and justice and help for every other nationality, immigrants and South Americans and now, you know, white people on opioids. We want to bring compassion to everybody but African Americans. So I don't think it's just having been oppressed. It is the oppression being ignored. So for people who are not African Americans, I'm going to ask you to kind of like take a step back and kind of like, you know, see it from a different perspective. So the other thing that is interesting about what we call the African American Holocaust, which was slavery, is that it's one of the very few things that is constantly swept under the rug, right? So we are taught more in school about the Jewish Holocaust than we are about the extent of the African-American Holocaust. And this creates feelings of animosities for African-Americans, right? It's like, oh, slavery is over. Let's push it underneath the rug. But let's never forget that Jews had a Holocaust. So again, it's not oppression Olympics. It is actually the reality of what we do and what we say. And the effect that though that system and those words have on a group of people, it is the same as you talk about let's talk about a little bit about the way that the opioid crisis, which is a drug addiction, is being dealt with now versus when the African-American community had a crack cocaine crisis, right? So crack cocaine, it was a choice. It was your fault. It was some kind of deficiency in the person and in the community. Whereas now the white community is dealing with almost the exact same thing, but now, and this is not rhetorical. I literally went to a conference, a patient and family service, which is an organization that I served on their diversity board. And the keynote speaker, her entire speech was her evidence that opioid addiction is a mental illness, and we have to treat it like a mental illness, not as something that people choose. There's literally, I mean, they're like putting research behind this. They're advocating, they're writing articles. So this is not like rhetorical that, oh, you're just have something against the white community. Like literal research. And we're not talking about like, you know, the white person that lives in a trailer park is advocating for this. We're talking about people who are PhDs, who are in positions of government, the narrative behind the exact same thing is being changed. So this creates kind of a, I don't want to say, I don't know if animosity is the right term. I don't know if animosity is the right term. So that is issues. So Rahil, in her comment, says, I have to disagree with how she presented her argument. I feel like with all of the oppression and discrimination black people face, no one should compare their hardship to black people. Didn't I just say that? So that's the way a lot of black people feel. Native Americans have it worse. And she was saying that she actually needs proof that what she said is correct. And I actually referred her to an article that actually shows that, yes, white women get paid more. Black women get paid less than white women, but more than Asians. Asian women get paid less than black women, but more than Hispanics, and Hispanic women get paid less. Again, this is general across 90% of every industry in America. This is just a fact. Like, if you go look up the statistics, it's a fact. Does that mean that there are not exceptions to the rule? Of course it does not mean there's not exceptions. It's also, I don't think about it as cross industries, right? Obviously, a doctor is going to get paid more than a manufacturer, right? So we're not talking across industries. We're talking exactly. So Amber Horton, she said, oh, no, it's for a reason. It is tiring and disrespectful to constantly get called on to be the backup. If she has an issue with the wage gap, she needs to call out white men and women. They are the top. Calling out black actresses as if they have not had a long struggle to get every bit of what they have, and as if they are not standing on a long legacy of being overlooked, is both disgusting and ridiculous. But she already knows better. She's not calling out Angelina Jolie and Tiffany. So I had kind of like a different aspect of when I listened to the interview. I did not think that she was particularly calling out black women. She was just stating it. Like, she wasn't saying, oh, hey, Gabrielle Union, at least you get paid more than I do. Like, she didn't, to me, she didn't phrase it that way. But again, maybe because I haven't heard her previous statements, I would have taken it different if I had been privy to what she has said earlier, where they claim that she is a habitual hater of black women. So maybe it was a little bit different. If you have a comment and you want to give me your view of how you heard Gina Rodriguez's comments in that panel discussion, go ahead and dial 203-684-8907. Again, 203-684-8907. And I'd love to hear from you to see what it is that you took away from the interview or took away from her comments. So Acacia Salati, she said that apparently this isn't the first or even the second time that she made a point that tried to check black women, our work and our sacrifice. So again, I really have to go back and look. So this is going to be a discussion I will probably continue under the comments of this video on Facebook, because I think that maybe I need to take it in a better context. But taking it face value on that particular panel discussion. And again, I watched the discussion from the beginning to the end of the video. I think the video is like 10 or 15 minutes. And everybody, and just a side note, why Emma Roberts was sitting there like a bump on the log? Like, she literally had nothing to say but a couple of mm-hmms. I don't know. That's suspect. And why nobody pointing that out? Like, why she, like, literally, she had no comment for the 15 minutes. Like, maybe she felt like it didn't really affect her. Like, Ellen Pompeo felt like she had something to say. Like, why Emma Roberts was a bump on the log? Okay, that's a side note. So, Miriam Sullivan said what she said was wrong, shallow, and lack knowledge of basic civil rights history. The fact that she's comfortable disregarding her own blackness is concerning as well. But there is a very long history in the United States of Latinx passing and using their borrowed white privilege against darker Latinx and ultimately black Americans. There's a very long history of Latinx siding with white conservative against darker people despite their own African roots. And it's interesting that some people are always cool with the other splinter minorities, distinguishing their plights, but get tired and bothered by descendants of slaves who labor, lives, and deaths unlock the doors for the small pot of liberty that every other non-white group of people in this land enjoy but never get give back to us for it. So, I think Mariam just is thinking a little bit too hard on this one. But in her way, she actually again reiterated the comments that I made earlier, that black people are really feel slighted at the fact that their oppression is constantly overlooked, right? And the reason why black people feel the need to constantly remind people is because the oppression of black people is the only oppression that is intentionally and systematically pushed under the rug and has attempts of erasure, right? So again, that's another way. So and Acacia, her response to that was so true. It was only as an adult when I realized that colorism plays a huge part in so many cultures, Asian, Indian, and Latinx. The whiter or lighter you are, the more beauty and privilege that you possess. Every woman in the diaspora knows this. So for black women to unapologetically embrace our dark skin and say it's beautiful is a radical act. Black women save the world on a regular basis. Our labor provides the wealth that this country is built on. Our art and style, our bodies influence culture with little attributions to us. Quote unquote, Bo Derek braids. So I have a big issue with another woman of color trying to erase those contributions because she does not understand or can't handle our magic. So the interesting thing to me about this exchange is we went from her kind of this thought that she was degrading black women to her playing colorism. And I actually didn't see that in that exchange, right? So when we talk about colorism versus a clear ethnic difference between someone, right? So yes, Latinx, Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, they are all descendants of slaves, right? But we also don't deny that they have a different nationality, a different culture, right? So we're not talking about whether or not light-skinned people get paid more than dark-skinned people. We're actually talking about people from their perceived origin being offered less in whether it's a movie role or a job role based on their perceived origin. And it's even done based on gender, right? So they will offer a woman less for a CEO job than they would if they had offered the man the job, even if it was a white woman, right? So I think that it opened up a wound. What she said, I think, opened up a wound for black women in particular. So in general, besides the feelings that we have as black people, as black women, we have an even deeper acknowledgement of the work we do without appreciation. And that work is not just work we do for other women who are non-black, but it's the work we do for our black men. It's the work that we do for our black communities. It's the work that we do for society at large, right? When we talk about as Democrats, liberals, progressives, when we talk about voting, it's the black woman's vote that has for the last since forever that has placed candidates over the edge, right? So it's not just the black vote. Let's be clear about that. It's the black woman's vote. Black women are more politically engaged. Black women are the one who vote Democratic and progressive and liberal. This is the black women who have, as they say, saved the election, right? So, and the to not have that recognition, it opens up wounds, right? Wounds that have never really closed because there's no appreciation in that. So when we talk about, so this, again, let's take it back when we talk about Oppression Olympics, right? Oppression Olympics, or who has it worse. I don't think that that is a productive conversation if we are going to progress. I don't think that we can, even as black people, who I personally feel have had it harder and that hardship longer than any other group of people on earth, particularly African Americans. So I don't think that it's productive for us as a people, us as a society, us as a group of women to feed into this idea of you can't mention your injustice because my injustice is worse. So that's what Oppression Olympics is. If you're wondering, like, what is she talking about with this Oppression Olympics stuff? So Oppression Olympics is people talking about their injustice to try to one up the other person. And because I'm just going to tell y'all, like, y'all can't one up black people. I'll be honest with you. I'm sorry. You really can't. And but on the same token, black people can't completely discount the injustice for other people, right? So that's really important. Black people, as black people, we recognize, I think that it's important for us to recognize and appreciate for ourselves that we keep these things front of mind to keep it as a consistent reminder and encourager to continue to resist, to continue to fight oppression, to continue to fight for justice, because we have not received justice. And so that is why we have people like Colin Kaepernick that takes a knee. That is why we have people that stand up, sit down, that throughout the throughout games and in the NFL, in basketball, because it is a wrong that has never been righted. But on the same token, I think that it's important for us to recognize, I would like for us to recognize that pay inequity among women, there is a difference. But what we have to figure out, and again, I do not have the answer to this question. It's a question that I've been asking myself for at least the last, seriously, for the last 6 months as a result of me and people who are on some of the boards that I'm on and noticing my absence of the meeting. Can confer that it is a moral question that I've asked myself. Is at what point do we advocate from the top down or from the bottom up? That is the question that we have to ask ourselves. Do we advocate? So right now we are advocating from the top down. We are advocating for white women to be equal to white men. But when do we advocate from the bottom up? Or is there a hierarchy to it? Do we kind of like, okay, once white women are equal, then we're going to advocate for black women. And then once black women are equal, we're going to advocate for Asian women. And once Asian women are equal, we're going to advocate for Hispanic women. So is that the hierarchy that we have to go through? And again, I don't have an answer to this question. I'm just putting it out there because I think that it is an interesting question for us to really talk about. And I believe in not just talking about, but also strategically planning around, right? So how does our advocacy work when it comes to equality among women? And can we expect women to be united in that struggle for equality when we are, even amongst ourselves, playing, quote unquote, the oppression Olympics game, or not allowing other people to be great, right? So when can we unify as women? That is also an interesting question. I only have like 5 more minutes to my show. So if you have a burning question or comment that you want to ask, you can dial 203-684-8907. That's 203-684-8907. I think that it is, again, I don't have an answer to that question. If you don't have time to call in and you want to comment underneath the Facebook video, I will also appreciate that, because this is not rhetorical. I know I'm just talking a lot, but this is not rhetorical. It is like a serious question. How do we, and is it possible to advocate for all women and not get offended when we say, so I wonder how white women feel when black women talk about them being paid less than black women. We see from the internet how black women feel when Latina women feel talk about them being paid less than them. So I think that it's a fair question. I think that it's an interesting way of really bringing this question forward and how we do it. And again, I don't have answers. I have a lot of questions myself. And I ponder this on a regular basis. I really do. I ponder this. How do I, as a black woman in a space of white feminism, how do I navigate that when I know that the people who are advocating for their best interests, and it is a repeat of history. So when I say a repeat of history, we know that feminism, so this is the historical feminist movement, that it was a movement that was actually born out of racism, right? The founders of feminism said the ability for black men to vote is what woke white women up, right? Black women and women of color did not become a part of the feminist movement until it became convenient, because we were the people in the factories. We were the people who could add numbers to advocacy in unions, right? So we were, again, black bodies were used to prop up the benefit of white bodies, of white women, because we made the numbers. And it's never been a movement that was an advocacy or a place where black women could advocate for equality or justice. Now that we are supposedly progressive, moving forward, how do we begin to change that? How do we take a movement that advocates for the rights of women and make it an advocacy for the rights of all women and not just white women? So that is the question that I will leave you with today. I want to thank you for listening. It's been an interesting show, and there's been some interesting comments along the way. Right? So it's been quite interesting. And if you are just tuning in, you're going to have to go catch it on some of the recordings, because you've been listening to Mornings with Mubarak on WNHHLP 103.5 FM. If you missed the show, you can go to Facebook Live, go to New Haven Independent Facebook page or the Fit Muslimah Facebook page, and you can find the video there, or we are on TuneIn Radio, iCloud, iTunes. Where else are we, Harry? iCloud, iTunes,
Twitter,
Periscope,
Stream Me. There's a list.
All right, we airware, y'all. Just look for WNHH. YouTube too.
Twitch.
There you go, Twitch. I don't even know what Twitch is. We airware. So this has been Mornings with Mubarak. Thank you for listening, and I remind you, today, like always, go about your day to be a voice and not an echo.